CoinWorld Plus is your new way to collect, manage your inventory, digitally authenticate coins, create your want list, buy and sell coins, and much more. Learn more about CoinWorld Plus at coinworldplus.com or download the app now at Google Play or the App Store.
Welcome to the CoinWorld Podcast with your host, Jeff Stark.
And as I've said from day one of this show, this is a big tent hobby. There's a lot of room for folks.
And Larry Jewett.
And learning has been such a tremendous amount of this journey.
The CoinWorld Podcast.
Well, hello, everyone. Welcome into the CoinWorld Podcast. Glad to have everybody here within the sound of our voice. I'm Larry Jewett. And...
I'm Jeff Stark, and we are back for another episode. We have a guest lined up this week. Get a Kunker. We'll talk about Numistacks, which is an effort to really offer digital solutions for the hobby, and especially when it comes to authenticity, provenance. You'll learn more about that if you stay tuned, and we sure hope you do, and we appreciate you staying tuned every week. I just at last night's Coin Club meeting, talked to a regular listener of the show, a couple of them, and we appreciate those folks who keep coming back week after week to join us and make this worth doing.
Oh, yeah, definitely so. And it's always great to hear from you, whether it's good, bad, or otherwise. I mean, it's just the idea that this is intended for you, the listener, not for us. I mean, it's for you to learn a little bit more about it. Maybe you can, find out an answer to a question that you've had that's been nagging at you that maybe we can help out with that. So we invite everyone to reach out to it. But thank you for listening. I will say right off the get-go here, I was unfortunately not able to be a part of the interview, so I am going to be listening, as you will be, to hear more about Numistacks. I'm very interested in what that has to happen as far as how that can impact us all here, because, you know, that's great, and we appreciate that the guest had the opportunity to be here with us. But, you know, I've been kind of looking at what I have here lately, and sadly, I can say it's been a few weeks since I actually made any kind of addition to my collection. And we've got some pretty good opportunities. We're going to be traveling here and to an area where there is a huge flea market. So I got to believe, I mean, I missed my chance when I went to Savannah, but I got to believe that this big flea market that we have down here is going to be an outlet for coins. And I've never had a chance to buy anything from a flea market. But if I remember from some of the stories, Jeff, you have had made purchases from flea markets. And so I'm kind of wondering if a collector like me had an opportunity to inspect the product at a flea market, what are some of the things we should know going in?
Well, I have bought stuff from flea markets in past, as I've talked about before. You never know what's going to turn up, right? And the interesting thing, I guess, is for everything that I bought at a flea market, I could have bought 100 times that, if not more. The material that I've come across at flea markets, it has sometimes been, and veering into often been, there's almost like there's some regular dealers set up there, and a good flea market, really good flea market, will have the regular group of dealers or a dealer or multiple dealers. But what I look for are the folks who don't maybe specialize in numismatics, but have that random one or two or three pieces that, you know, you figure, and I appreciate those folks who are there month in, month out, offering a place to buy and sell the coins at the flea market. But you got to figure that most of those folks, you know, they somewhat know their stuff to really know their stuff, right? You know, you can set, anybody can set up at a show at a flea market, but you're not going to last long if you're losing money at it, right? And, you know, the motivations of the seller factor in. The flea market event I went to recently, where I bought some 1904 World's Fair related stuff, the items that I bought, the seller was selling them not because she made an active trade in that niche of the market. It's because these items her mom had owned, and she was just trying to deaccession the mother's collections, very large collection. And I saw her a year ago at this same event and bought some medals and encased scents and elongated scents, all related to the fair, last year as well. And this year I, you know, she had this stuff last year, but you gotta spread it out. You can't, you know, bite the whole apple in one go. But knowing that this seller had no cost basis for it, right? It was inherited. So throw away what her mom paid for it. It's all found money. The seller wants to get rid of it. So, you know, I knew from last year in talking to the seller that, you know, she was willing to make a deal because she wants the stuff gone, and she especially wants the stuff to go to somebody who's going to appreciate it. She doesn't want to throw the stuff away. But, you know, did I pay less than full market for that? Well, sure. But why would you? If you're, you know, if I'm going to a flea market like the one here in St. Louis, the Belleville flea market, which I've only been to a couple of times, nothing wrong about it. I'm not impressed, certainly after having been at a flea market in Ohio that was just really phenomenal. A regular monthly flea market, that is. And we can get into the varieties of that as well in a minute. I appreciate that those folks show up week in, week out, or month in, month out, as it were. But it's going to be harder to find a deal if that's what you're looking for. But they do provide a great service. Certainly, folks who go to the flea market, maybe they aren't thinking about, oh, yeah, I've got these coins I want to sell. And they go to the flea market and they see the dealer. And then they, you know, the next time the show rolls around, they take them to that dealer. And, you know, rather than try to find a shop that may or not be open, may or may not be open on a schedule that fits their schedule, it's a great, you know, there's a great service that a lot of these folks provide. And we should, I don't want to say reward that, but, you know, we should appreciate that. And if there's a way to support them, you know, if we're going to be buying something anyway, why not, you know, find it from that seller? But I was privileged enough when I visited a friend of the show, Chris Bullfinch, last year in Boston. We went to the Brimfield Flea Market. I had vaguely heard of it, and we were talking to his, I guess his mom or dad had said, hey, you know, you guys are looking for something to do tomorrow. The Brimfield Flea Market's not that far. Why don't you go down there? And we went to that event, and there really weren't, you know, it happens three times a year, so it's much more sporadic or intermittent than a monthly flea market like the one in Belleville, Illinois, or Urbana, Ohio, or wherever. Florida, I know, has a bunch of great flea markets, and a lot of like regular dealers are set up at that show. Even the one in Urbana, Ohio, that I went to, there were some regular dealers. And one time I ended up buying a fake there because the guy didn't know what he had. I did a quick internet search, but I couldn't really get internet on my phone there, and I took a chance and I lost. But as it turns out, I paid $5 for a fake, and the fakes are selling on eBay for $10 at the time. So in a way I won, but you know, whatever. So you got to be careful of that. But back to Brimfield, there were a couple folks who had random numismatic items, medals, commemorative coins. I did happen to buy, I can't even remember what U.S. silver dollar, but it was, I asked the dealer, what do you want for it? And it was a couple bucks under melt. And it's like, I can't pass up silver below melt. And if the dealer doesn't specialize in it, you know, if they're not selling coins regularly, then you do have a better chance to make that cool score. But I mean, let's be real. It's so sporadic of a chance to stumble upon that dealer. You know, there were just a handful of items that I ended up buying, and there were there weren't that many more that I looked at and didn't buy because the price was wrong. You know, they're it's hard to find depending on the flea market. So this is a truism that I found in antique stores, coin shops, coin shows, flea markets. The more work involved in presenting the item to the buyer, the stronger the price relative to market you're probably going to pay. The double-edged sword is, you know, I mean, I found cool stuff that people just dump in a dollar bin because they don't want to take the time to work it up, but you got to do the work of digging, and there may not be as many of those folks that offer those chances for the little, you know, I call the pocket change lottery, the little gambling of, oh, I'm going to find something good, the treasure hunt. That's what I'm looking for. So you can, especially if you go back to the same show, like you're in Florida and you have several within, I'm sure, a couple hours or two of driving that you could go to regularly if you wanted, you get a sense of, okay, this is what this dealer has. And if you go 6 months later and they have mostly the same stuff, then you kind of get a sense, oh, you know, maybe it's not worth my while. I found some cool random things in that Urbana, Ohio one. I found a horse-shaped token from Kentucky, of all places. You know, we're 3 hours, 2.5 hours from the Kentucky-Ohio border, maybe 2 hours out of, anyway, you know, we're far enough away from Kentucky. So how did it get to Ohio? But the guy, I think he wanted $25 or something. I was like, yeah, sure, I'll get that. That seems very fair for a horse shaped token. It's not a common token that you just see all the time, like the one that I see from Sydney, Ohio, the home of Coin World, that, you know, is, I mean, my gosh, I have 20 or 30 of them I bought at that flea market. So,
yeah, see, that's the thing with Florida. I mean, we have people coming in from all over. And I know that, interestingly, when the TAMS president, Token and Metal Society president, Jim Brokamp, was down here, he went to a flea market and found a token from Ohio, which happens to be what he collects. So it's just kind of neat. I mean, I think more of the flea markets, I think of them as an opportunity on the Exonumia side as much as anything. And that's a place where I'm going to be, you know, seeking out some items that, you know, you never know. I mean, antique stores around here have also been places where we found things that have come from different regions. And that includes Exonumia and items like that. So I'm looking forward to this trip, and I appreciate the idea that, you know, you've been able to share some of your knowledge and some of your expertise with us. And I'm certain that some of our listeners have had the opportunity or would relish the opportunity to get back out there and explore that type of thing, because it's one of those deals where they say on that television show, you just never know what's going to walk through that door. And it's just like, you never know. If you want to go exploring, these are some of the places where you can look. Well, we've got a special interview coming up here in just a matter of a couple of moments, but let's go ahead and take a look at the calendar and find out, as we are rapidly approaching the month of April, what was happening in the world when we take a look back at this week in numismatics.
Absolutely. Let's go to March 29. And what happened on that day? Well, in 1933, that is when the annual United States Mint Assay Commission assayed the 1933 St. Gaudens Gold $20 Double Eagles. How about that? Much talked about on this program, famous coin in the hobby, certainly in all numismatics, because the highest price paid ever for a coin, period, U.S. or otherwise. So that's kind of a big deal. I can't let this week slip by without also mentioning March 30th, the next day in 1966. What happened then? That was when the first copper nickel clad dimes were released for circulation. As you may remember, and heck, you were around for it, those coins were dated 1965, but because of the transition from silver, 90% silver coinage, to copper nickel clad, that transition took quite a long time. So in 1966, March 30th, they were releasing dimes dated 1965. So that was a curious time in numismatics, that changeover, something that we experience and feel today. I mean, one of the laments of folks in the hobby is that, oh, kids today can't find anything good in circulation, like they could when these folks who were doing the lamenting were growing up. You know, when I was a kid, we would still find silver in circulation. Well, the reason we don't see that now is that big switch back in 1966. So there you go.
Definitely a historic moment right there for sure. So that's great. Seems like I'm having mic issues. Hopefully it's all working out for everybody. But it looks like we've got a relatively recent look back in time here as we in coin world history. I mean, a lot of times we get into the 80s and the 70s and even the 90s, but I want to take a look at something a little newer than that. I mean, you got that little jibe in there about how I was around when silver was around, but let's just go back a couple of years this time. Pick an issue.
Well, random number generator came up with the year 2022, not too long ago. Remember those days. And so we go to the March 28th, 2022 issue, and the big news on the cover of this issue was Paul Jouk's story about the Proof Purple Heart Silver Dollar going on sale on March 24th. And that coin is special because it's one of just a handful of US coins to feature colorization. In this case, the heart is indeed purple on the obverse of the coin. And it's one of those, I'd say, you know, there's been a huge trend over the last 20 years, and it's not unrelated that America has had a lot of security concerns, you know, international efforts in Iraq, Afghanistan, and elsewhere. There's been a lot of militaristic themes over the last 20 years in our commemorative coin program. This certainly fits that, you know, dynamic. And it's a very poignant, moving design on the reverse with a medic tending to an injured soldier. I don't own the coin, but that's not for any reason other than I own so much else. I can't own everything. It is, to me, a really well done coin. And so that's why I wanted to focus on it since it, you know, it was this week in coin world history.
Indeed, and that's a fitting subject for us as well, because some of the letters on the letters page even came back after that very same subject on the Purple Heart coin. It says, "Prices too high for the program." The U.S. Mint has the pricing on the Purple Heart Hall of Fame silver dollar and the copper nickel clad half dollar all out of whack with what most people would be willing to pay. No surprise that they are slow selling items. That's from Robert Olson. Another one says, subject not that popular. Subject matter, the Purple Heart commemorative coins more popular, but I was wrong. And that was from Ernesto Aguilar. Matter of interest was enrollments for everything. The United States Mint should offer enrollment on every issue they have, allowing the collector to get at least one of the types of the coins they collect. The collector who buys a complete series or type of coin should not have to compete with those who buy only the hot issues. It's the collector who's the bread and butter of the Mint who's getting shafted the way it's currently done. Stephen Kravitz via email. So there you have a number of opinions, short letters. Letters tend to get a little shorter, if at all, in the 2020s, as sometimes the letters are hard to come by. Nobody sits down and writes letters too much. You got to get them all from the internet, and we seem to do that. But it'll be interesting to see what some of the topics moving
Yeah.
forward in 2024 will happen to be that will generate some letters for our letters to the editor's page. That's from March 28, 2022.
You hit upon something though. You know, this day and age, when everyone can gripe and moan on Facebook or elsewhere, the letters are often not the chosen outlet. But hey, hats off to our friend of the show, Ernesto Aguiar, who we've answered questions from in the last few weeks, I think, in the last month anyway. So how about that? You were right. You are, I think, having a little mic issues, and I apologize. The interview coming up, there were a few moments of intermittent issues with Get a Conquer, but hang on, stay with it. It's very interesting what Numistax is doing. But before we get to the interview, I think I need to ask you a question or two. Last episode, mind was going to the 250th anniversary coming up. And so playing off that, I wanted to know about coins that were issued in 1826. According to the Coin World Trivia Game, expert level question here, the U.S. Mint struck only one silver coin dated in 1826. What is its denomination?
Yes, it is. I have no...
I honestly don't. I...
Red book and look it up and I...
Take the time...
there, so I'm not sure which one it would have been, and this
situation's aggravating me.
Yeah, you're not alone in that. It was the capped bust half dollar, so
makes sense.
Yeah, big denomination certainly back in the day, and that was the only coin apparently struck in 1826. For circulation. So,
okay. I'm going to check that and see if I can use it for a coin value spotlight in the future. So, you. Another story.
All right. Hey, you're cutting in and out. Real quick, we're talking. I got to speak with Get a Conquer of Numistax, and I got thinking, that might be confused by some of our listeners with Stax, also known as Stax Bowers. And I got thinking, well, how long has Stax Bowers been around? Numistax just started this year. When did Stax Bowers get its start? So that is the question for this episode. Readily available information, easy to find. But think about that as you're listening to the interview with Get a Conquer. Here that interview is. And again, apologies for a few little glitches in there. We did our best. Here's the interview. The Coin World Podcast is delighted today to be joined by Get a Conquer, who is the CEO and founder of a new numismatic technology intersection, a new firm called Numistax. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Jeff. Appreciate it. Looking forward to the discussion.
Yes. So we had the pleasure of meeting at the New York International this year, where I first learned of this project. How do you describe Numistax to those who you're introducing it to?
So we are a digitalization service for a numismatic enthusiast. So be it collectors, dealers, distributors, mints, all the participants in the industry can benefit from it. So it's a service that's not limited only to historic coins, but also to modern.
And
I think when we... Yeah, please.
So what is the underlying technology and how does this work?
So yeah, in order to provide our services, which really go from archiving and documenting entire collections, so our users, specifically the collectors, can sign on our database through and then choose a profile that they would like to use, and that profile, of course, gives them a specific user profiles on the platform. We have a dedicated authorization concept behind it. First of all, as I said, they can document and archive their coins. So, of course, the technology behind it is a sophisticated database with predefined fields. We looked at, as I said, at modern coins and historic coins. We detail how they are described. What are the parameters used, what is of interest, but also looking at it from a compliance perspective, what dealers as well as coin dealers have to provide in order to prove the legitimacy of the coins in the specific country where they're actually moments. So we have especially in Europe, but also globally, we have tightening cultural asset protection laws. So collectors, as well as dealers, need to prove that the coin is actually legitimately traded internationally. So users can upload all documentation that supports the point, from tax declaration documents, information that has been digitalized from coin auction catalogs. So it's all about storing information that may be of importance or interest concerning the specific coin or the entire. So as I said, there's a huge base. Of course, I mean, we have the specific storage capacity from a technology perspective. So our entire setup is Swiss-based. So from the technology to the legal entity that we founded, so everything is Swiss-based, and hence deduction laws fall into play. And also our even though we in cloud solutions, everything is Swiss-based. So I think that's also important from a technology perspective. And of course, thinking about a little bit further what we can, so people cannot only store and archive and document things around their collections, they can also create so-called certificates of authenticity. We call them coin passes, together with our certified coin dealers, or they do it themselves. So what is that? So basically, we created a service that is one proof. So we need certification system in place to say, well, what
I've seen to,
qualifies for which.
Can I get you to dial back?
Yes.
To rewind just a little bit. You cut out quite a bit there after explaining the coin pass. I'm sorry, but I want to make sure everybody understands the, I don't want to say revolutionary nature of this, but you know, it's important to understand. So if you can restate,
yes, and
it again,
I'm
that would
really
be great.
Apologize for the poor connection. Maybe I should switch to the phone. But yeah, so revolutionary in addition to being able to store all the documents that I refer to, we are creating forgery proof coin passes, so which are certificates of authenticity, together with the coin dealers. So we had accreditation system in place. So coin dealers, depending on the guarantee that they provide, fall into specific buckets. So the highest certification a coin dealer can get is a level 5. So that means they provide long authenticity guarantees. With the coin dealers, we have certificates of authenticity. And that's probably not something surprising. It's done as part of the invoices, but we create digital certificates that are put on the blockchain. So that makes them forgery. So nobody can change the document with us. So I think that's very, very important. So if you find additional information, let's say we have a piece of provenance that was not formally known, that to the certificate of authenticity. So we create a new one. We have a version system in the background, so we know why and how and who created your new certificate. So that's very important. And then in addition to that, we put other technical measures in place that actually map the physical object, the coin, to the certificate. So we have a one-on-one mapping, and that makes it very hard to exchange a coin or a certificate. So they are really one entity because of the measures we put in place. So, and that's something that currently doesn't exist. So, and even more importantly, when the coin is sold to the next collector, because we have blockchain technology in the background, so we have the certificates of authenticity in the collector's wallets. So if the coin changes owner, so then the certificate can go with it. So the new owner actually gets a forgery of authenticity coin board. And I think that's very, very useful for the collectors in the market.
Yeah, that's
so pretty... we have some other features that, yeah.
No, go ahead.
Yeah, we have some other features in place that go into the direction of sharing information on our platform. So each user, or we have authorization concepts, and they are around the user. So the user with whom he or she shares information, what kind of information, so they can share with participants on our platform, single coins, specific collections that they defined, or their entire portfolio. I think that is also something that specifically helps the coin dealers in client sourcing, because they can share information through our platform without manual interventions. So once the data is in the platform, they can share it with people that may be interested in the coins. So that's also something new.
So they would control access to that information, though.
Yeah, and very, yes, they do. And very importantly, because for collectors, I think that's one of the most critical aspects, just can stay fully anonymous on our platform. Even though we KYC, we put in place know your client, know your procedures, but we have different service providers, we have Chinese walls between legal entities. So if somebody wants to stay anonymous with us, that's possible due to the setup we have chosen.
That's pretty interesting. I guess, does this work for raw coins, or does all the coins in this, to get a coin pass, do they have to be slabbed?
No, not at all. So, I mean, of course, slabbing has got a very important role in the industry, specifically in the US. But we look at it from a data perspective. So any data point that has been created on the coin is relevant and can be stored in our database. So all the information created through grading can be put into our database as a data point. If coins are not graded, it doesn't matter. We can treat them equally fine. So.
And is this, it sounds like there would be especially beneficial to employ this for more valuable coins. At what price point do you think it makes sense? You know, I mean, you mentioned World Mints adopting this, but I'm not going to make a coin pass for a bullion coin, right? At what point do I need to consider getting a coin pass?
Well, I think that's depending on what benefits I would like to gain through using our platform. As I said, I mean, there are various, right? So for coin dealers and large distributors, probably it's an improved client just because they can change, they can share data around the coin very easily through our platform. So if you look at it from that perspective, just improving a client's service, and people are asking for that, maybe it's not about, well, how much additional margin can I make, but it's an improved customer experience that they can create. Yeah, instead of emails and files on photographs and everything, upload the information into our platform, and then we can share it automatically with the users. So that's one. And I think that's on a price point, as I said. Then from a compliance perspective, very, very similar. And that goes into sourcing your clients even better. Even though compliance proving that the coin does not fall under the cultural protection laws, cultural asset protection laws, obviously is only relevant to historic coins because it is not applied to modern coins. So going back to your question, that is a benefit purely generated for historic coins. and also levering numismatic research. But in addition to more efficient communication, compliance, and client service, adding specific information to modern coins, and that's already in the US market, but you can add a lot of data to the coin and then share that through our system. So we can show videos, and a lot of modern producers create videos on the coin and use it as marketing instruments, but we can bundle it with the certificate of authenticity, and then it travels coin to the respective new user. So we think that people may be interested in the idea of getting exclusive information. So it's more about product differentiation, and that's probably the benefit for modern coins.
And
I'm not talking about prices. I'm talking about the benefits that we can create for the users.
Yes. How does somebody access this information? Is it on a website? Is it through an app? Is it both?
No, we have we have a traditional platform that users can access. So our services are subscription based. So at the moment, it's for free for collectors. People can onboard on our choosing the collector profile. And of course, depending on the user groups, so in B2B, we have different plans people can or companies can subscribe to.
Okay. And as I recall from a previous discussion, this will allow for collectors who are, as you noted, selling their collection, they can transfer this coin pass to the new owner, but it also allows owners to leverage their collection for financial benefit, right? As far as like if I wanted to take a loan against the collection, the coin pass data can then be shared with the loan guarantor. Is that right?
Yeah, that's spot on. So we are working with two very large financial services institutions as we speak to convince them that we actually catch all the risks and reasons why they currently don't provide loans against numismatic collections. So for them, it's too risky. They understand it well enough, and hence they don't do it. But with our services, and from the first discussion that we are very convinced that we can recommend companies that are going to accept options under specific conditions and provide loans against them, which would be, again, be a very good client service.
This is, it's been about 10 weeks since we met in New York to talk about this. What kind of response have you received in that? I know that's a short window, but, it takes a while to get that runway, space to lift off. But what kind of response have you received so far in that short time?
As you probably remember, right? So we already in New York that we need to have we actually need to have two services to come up with a solution. So one is insurance companies and two is the banks. And of course, our services need to be fully in place, which they are, of course. But so I had the pleasure to talk to, I think, five worldwide operating insurance companies. They all think this is an amazing and it's a great idea. And as you can imagine, it's overcoming different risk silos in their organizations. But three are actually considering it and working on it. Then it's an easier discussion once you have had successful discussions with the insurances. I cannot go into further detail, but I'm very, very convinced that we will soon be able to communicate at least two partners that offer the services.
Gotcha. I guess I should have been more clear. What kind of industry response from collectors, dealers, and that sort have you received? Yeah. I mean, that's good.
I'm
it's good to
sorry,
know. Jeff. No,
yeah, I mean, I'm so excited about this, of course. Yes, from the industry. So collectors like the archiving and digitization functionality, because it just solves many problems. One is, of course, said the tightening cultural asset protection laws. In Europe, by next year, you are bulletproof by provenance that the coin is legitimately traded country wherever it sits. If not, they're going to be measures put in place. And we see that sometimes happening already. So they are very happy because this is a pressing point and they feel that it helps a lot. The other aspect is leaving information for the next generation, so for the inheritance case, is also something you could do on our platform. So, of course, people like that, right? So. But then the lending solution, I mean, if you second generation starting a collection, if you're not forced to sell it because we know it's a volatile, so maybe it's not the right moment to do it, but still, at least in Europe, there is inheritance taxes that you have to pay. So the lending solution is something very, very important. So, and people like it. They specifically like that they can stay anonymous. And I like that too, because I need to be seen as an independent party in the market. So if I can't see who the user is behind data, that's even better for me, because I cannot access this, full stop. And the user like that very much too. So it is independent. There is no auction house behind it. So there is no self-interest other service. And the platform, from our perspective, which is also very important.
Well, that's a good moment to segue to the or nail home the drive home the fact that, you know, if listeners hear the name Kunker, they might automatically assume you have a connection to the auction house of the same name in Germany. You are related, but you're not involved in that firm. I just want to let listeners know.
Yeah, and thank you for mentioning it, Jeff. So some people told well, we are not sure whether it is an advantage or disadvantage that you actually carry the same name and you're from the same family, because people may suspect that I'm working together with them. So I can say here in this podcast, the company is fully independent, self-funded by myself and a partner. So all the partners mentioned on the homepage. So there is no connection other than that we're family from a business perspective. That's fully fully separated. And I think that's very, very important. And yes, I mean, even if people suspect, I can ensure and 100% guarantee if they honest, I can't see it. So, yeah. So that's why that was the first driver why I did it, because I didn't want to fall. I didn't want to be seen as somebody who's selling information in the family interest, which I'm certainly not.
Yeah. Now, I do want to rewind here just a second. I want to confirm something, because this is, something I didn't know or wasn't aware of. It sounds like you said a few minutes ago that there's new cultural property laws going into effect either this year or next year in Europe. Did I hear that right?
Yes. So let me be a bit more specific around that. So the laws do not change. but they are enforced in a different way. So there will be digital databases put in place by the states in Europe, and people need to submit provenance facts to prove the legitimacy of the coins. And then it's something new. So it's not a new legislation, it's not a new law, but the enforcement is different. So by June 27 next year, people will be asked to provide certain information. Now, of course, I mean, if we have the information of the users in their remit on our platform, have organized the information already in a specific way that is will also be accepted by the states, then we will have an API and they can just submit it if they want to. So it's okay. No entry, no nothing. So it's very streamlined, and we think we are convinced that we are meeting all the criteria necessary here.
So it sounds like you're poised to, I mean, this is really coming at the right time then to gain wider acceptance, certainly in Europe, but the application here in the U.S., where I sit, is evident to me from this side of things too.
Yeah, I mean, it's a global market, specifically for the historic. And I think everybody needs to be aware of in Europe, because a lot of the coins are European heritage.
Okay, so that's a good time to close things out, wrap things up, send people on their way. I want to let listeners know this is Numistax, numistaxx.com. There's all sorts of information out there. You did say that there's various service plans, and there's collectors, there's a launch promo. All the information is on the website. It's is there any other closing thoughts for this?
Yeah, so as I said, collectors benefit from a full annual trial, as we both mentioned already, but I think that's important. So you can just try and see if you like the service, and if not, no harm is done. Just let us know you don't like it, and you don't have to invest. But something that's for the B2B business, I have developed a lot of additional plans. So if somebody is interested to hearing more about it, please talk to us and we can discuss it.
Okay. Collector level, the first 100 collectors get a free annual membership. Is that, have you tapped that level, or is that still apply then?
Yeah, we are getting closer and closer, but we decided to do an unlimited free trial this year.
Okay, very good. So check it out, listeners. It's I had somebody in the market after the New York show. Actually, I guess it was after the Berlin show. He met with you there, and he said, "Did you get a load of this?" Hopefully it's not ahead of the market. Hopefully, that the services that you're providing are really, I don't want to say revolutionary, that's an overused word, but hopefully the market is ready to accept it and adopt it, and we'll see where it goes.
Excellent. Yeah, I mean, I'm very much looking forward to feedback, even if it's negative feedback, so help us to improve further. And I hope to see many listeners on our platform sooner or later.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Jeff. Okay, thank you.
And that was the interview with Gitte Kunker. Thanks again for hanging on during those difficult moments. And, it's still, we worked really hard to get her on the show, being she's in Europe and we're over here, and it took a while to get her. So we're glad we did. And thank you for listening to the interview.
I don't know if I'm still here or not. If I'm still here and you can still hear me, Appreciate that interview. Appreciate that opportunity, as we are definitely enjoying what she had to offer us. So thanks for listening here today. I'm going to go away because I don't know, you know, if I'm going to be around here. It says failure to detect your microphone. Please make sure your microphone is properly connected. I haven't touched it. I'm here. Okay.
Yeah.
So I just had my rant right here. Then hopefully you heard it and heard my phone ringing, the whole works. So anyway,
let's get out of here before any more issues. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, you went through enough today with all your internet problems and me too. So let's just, thank the folks for hanging in there. Appreciate you being there. And we'll try to get these audio problems all worked out so that we can join you again with the quality you deserve to have as listeners for the Coin World podcast.
And in the meantime,
I think I can say happy collecting.
Yes. Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Coin World podcast. Don't forget to subscribe and we'll see you next week.
CoinWorld Plus is your new way to collect, manage your inventory, digitally authenticate coins, create your want list, buy and sell coins, and much more. Learn more about CoinWorld Plus at coinworldplus.com or download the app now at Google Play or the App Store.